Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Welcome to I'm Listening. This is a Frasier fan podcast. I have a special second time guest today who was on the pod in season one, and I must say is the reason I got a massive amount. I consider it a massive amount of new followers because of this gentleman. So today we have returning guest Anthony Oliveira on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me back. It's such a pleasure to talk about Frasier. I've been watching episodes all day. It's Sunday and I've been in pajamas just like watching the weirdest episodes I can find. So this is such a pleasure.
I'm so glad. Yes, this is a special episode, and it was actually Anthony's idea to go with today's theme, which is going to be somewhere between high concept and weird and or both, which is kind of talking about episodes that sort of, I don't know, how would you describe it? In my mind, I was thinking, what do some of these weird high concept episodes have in common? And I was just thinking things that are outside of the box of usual Frasier. How would you describe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in weirdness as a phenomenon in general. I think that, so I wanted a chance to think about it. It was something that I hadn't thought about in Frasier yet. And so like putting together a list of like which episodes stand out as somehow bizarre, whether it's like formally or whether it's structurally doing something strange or a sort of breaking with the show's formula, whatever that means. And like it was fun seeing how the episodes group like season wise. It was fun seeing how they group writer wise. So it was a fun little experiment, at least on my end. But yeah, I wanted to think about like ways that the show stops being a sitcom and starts looking like something else at various moments.
Yes. And also the thing, like there's a few episodes here which we can get into more specifically later. But like, you know, an episode like, The Impossible Dream. Actually, Daphne Returns, where Niles and Frasier go into like old memories of Niles and Daphne. All I can think about was stuff like that where they're not in a studio. I'm trying to think, how is the audience watching this? Because right. In that episode, it's them, I don't know, in front of a green screen? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they did film in front of a live studio audience. Like the writers talk, the actors talk variously about like feeding off the energy of the audience. When we talked about the Joe Keenan sort of farce episodes last time, like the cabin episode, like they talk about how the audience was like losing their minds at how funny something is. But a lot of these episodes that we're looking at this week, I don't know which ones you picked, but a lot of them require like weird staging. A lot of them require intense amounts of like internal monologue. Daphne Returns needs a lot of green screening because they're literally inserting Kelsey Grammer and David Hyde Pierce into scenes from previous episodes. So thought, what were they seeing in person?
I thought it looked great.
I mean, it looks very 90s.
For the time.
but yeah, that sort of, and that energy feeds into this, the surreal quality that these sequences have, because you can sense something is off. You can sense that even just the way that they're recording, the way that they're being shot. One of the other episodes I was thinking about where they're, Freudian Sleep, the one where they're all taking turns sleeping. It's like this nested dream sequence. Like there's some very tight shots. I don't think we've ever seen a close-up on Niles's face quite as tight as during his dream sequence. And like that surreal quality lends itself to that that strange energy that reverberates through these later season episodes.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Freudian Sleep was, I think that was the last season, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's 11-14. Yeah. I found that in general, like, we talked about last time sort of farce and how the show eventually was allowed to become so baroque that you could open at the end of a farce. There's that one where Martin comes on stage and is like disguised as the Duke, some kind of Italian Duke, and we never even find out what it was. And that sort of baroqueness also starts, like the episodes I thought were the weirdest also largely coincide in like the last four seasons, because the show's formula has become so reified or so stale that it can now start really experimenting with these like nested dream sequences or like sliding Frasers, where the show opens with a title card that says this is going to get, like, that's the type, that's the insert card we get, and then it like depends on you keeping track of when Frasier's arm is broken in a shot and when it's not, so that you know which alternate reality we're in at various moments. So like it starts demanding more of the audience, not just a live audience, but like the viewing audience at home.
Oh, yeah, I did. That is definitely a high, the sliding doors thing. Yeah, I forgot about that episode. That was weird.
Yeah, it's so strange. Are we talking about the episodes yet, or do you want to talk about?
Oh, we totally can. Yeah, I think it's totally fine to just go back and forth. We don't have to go like episode to episode if there's just things that come up to you.
Oh, okay.
If that is okay, because I wanted to tell you my fun fact that I learned.
Okay.
And it it relates to what we're talking about, okay. Which is specifically you were talking about the Freudian Sleep episode. So it's a good segue. But first I'll ask you this. Do you have in that episode like a favorite sort of dream or nightmare of any of the people that, you know, in that episode, whether it be Martin's musical?
I find Martin's musical the most upsetting.
Really?
<to watch. laughs> Because there's something just so off about it. There's something so, it feels like a sequence out of Twin Peaks. Like there's no real joke in it. It's just like he's dancing and like we're immediately off put by the fact that he throws away his cane, right? Like that is, it's weird to see Martin without his cane. I start to worry for him as soon as he doesn't have it. He's also, John Mahoney is not singing well, which I don't know if he can. I don't remember if he's particularly musical as a performer or not, but it feels like full of these strange choices. They start harmonizing. The can-can dancers come on. I find that one the most upsetting. My favorite visual gag in the episode is when the woman comes on during Daphne's dream dressed as Martin. She's like this sexy pinup version of Martin Crane with the cane and the like flannel top that's like tied around her waist. And Niles drags her off stage to have sex with her. She's like, Dad. And like, that's
that's
maybe
weird.
My favorite moment. Do you have a favorite?
Well, so And so the thing is, I liked, there's only, I think, in my mind, two instances where Martin gets musical. I think that's not true. You do actually hear him. Okay, there's when he does the Frank Sinatra song.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right? So John Mahoney can sing for sure.
I think like it's very, I wouldn't say he has this incredible voice, but it feels, I don't know if I feel like he's done it before. This is me going off of zero research and just a feeling. But
well, he's definitely like a stage actor. I mean, he has that sort of like Frank Sinatra is a natural reference for him. Like, can Frank Sinatra sing? Yeah, kind of, in that way that it's like, it always sounds like he's just kind of talking, right?
Yeah, exactly. So this is what I learned. Get ready. So because I like listening to him sing, and I know for you it was upsetting to watch. I was all for the musical. I am all for when Frasier sings, and so when I was talking to Joe Keenan, I think during an early season of Frasier, there like a composer that I believe Joe Keenan had worked with before had proposed doing a musical episode of Frasier.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, maybe you knew that. Well,
no, I didn't, but it makes 100. I mean, my instinct is always like, we need to do a musical episode, and like this cast could belt it for sure.
Right. And the reason I believe this is most of what Joe said was that it was going to be logistically really difficult to do, like to do it well for one episode, you know, just writing it and then having the actors, and some of them didn't have the experience, you know, singing and memorizing lines and everything. So I believe logistics was a big part of the reason it didn't happen. But I was very excited at the thought. Is that something you wish you could have seen or did happen, like
yes.
a musical episode?
I mean, obviously listening to Kelsey Grammer sing is like great. In fact, he sings in the Sliding Frasers episode we just talked about. It's one of the ways he off-puts the love interest in it. But obviously his voice is just so amazing. But I can 100% believe that when Buffy the Vampire Slayer did a musical number, it basically demanded the entire resources of that season, right? Like Whedon basically spent the whole summer writing one episode. So it is one of the most classic episodes of the series, but it's a demanding project. I could see how that would be very difficult. Unless you did like a jukebox kind of musical where like you used pre-written songs, you know, like
Oh, yeah, that's true. I didn't even think of that. Maybe for the reboot.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. Episode 4 of the Frasier reboot, which I have not yet been invited to write on. Have you been invited to write on it yet?
No, I have not.
Where are invitations? I can't believe this. What?
Well, this is what I'm very curious about. So I'm curious about who Kelsey Grammer met with Funny enough, I talked to Joe Keenan probably 2 days, I want to say, before that, like, that story came out. Like, Kelsey Grammer was, like, in talks or something. But when I brought it up to Joe Keenan, you know, he made it sound like that was not something that was in the cards. And he was like, especially because, you know, John Mahoney is not here anymore. And I was like, I totally respect that. Uh-huh. And I still do. However, I think at some point, as much as I was like, oh, I don't know. And then I think that same day that news came out, by nighttime, I'd had a whole day to process the reboot news. And I was walking down the street with my boyfriend, who, by the way, is fully aware of this podcast. And in early episodes, like the episode 1, he did the sound for me in my apartment. So he's fully aware. And he was so
yeah. Family podcasts together, stays together, I think.
Exactly. And so he was like, so you're telling me you have no interest in being involved in this reboot? And I was like, well, actually, and then it just came out of my mouth. I was like, no, actually, there's an entire premise I can see that I would be into. So I'd love to get into.
What would be your pitch?
Okay, here's my pitch, and then I would love to hear yours. And I do, by the way, feel that this falls into high concept of weird and weird, because at this point, the idea of this future of more Frasier is high concept to me, because it currently does not exist. Okay, here's my pitch. Here we go. So in my mind, I would very much want the reboot. And a reboot would be, this is a continuation. I don't know. I get confused about reboot, like as in, is this Archie but Riverdale, or is this a continuation?
I guess a revival, or
perhaps what's happening with like Will and Grace right now. So that's what I'm imagining. This is picking up now in current day. So what I'm picturing is Martin is definitely acknowledged. And to me, a big reason, because, you know, at the end of Frasier has left Seattle and we don't know what happened to him and if he links up with Charlotte. But in this future, in this current day and age, I would think perhaps that there's a big, sort of the big event that brings the family back together in Seattle is Martin has passed away. So he comes back to Seattle where, and I still haven't decided if he ended up living happily ever after with Charlotte or if he, you know, settled down somewhere else. I've really given this some thought. So he comes back and he isn't particularly super close with Freddie, as I don't think that he ever really was.
Comes back to Seattle? Are we back in Seattle?
Okay. Yes, everyone's back in Seattle because Martin has passed away. You know, I think Niles and Daphne have stuck around and they have at least one child who's, I guess, not a child anymore. It's been a while, right? How many years has it been?
He's like, what, 15?
Is that right?
2004?
Yeah. 2004?
And David is his name, right? Because he's named after the creator who passed away in 9/11.
You keep saying
what you were saying. So it's literally like they're there for Martin's funeral. Is that like
They're there for Martin's funeral.
Okay.
Freddie and I mean, I know this is controversial, but I am like trying to like the circle of life thing. So basically the idea is Frasier comes back. The fact that Martin has passed away is a really big turning point in everyone's life. And he does decide to come back to Seattle. I haven't fully figured it out. But the plan is that Freddie reconnects to and comes back to Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps they end up living together.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. I went there. Okay. I did. I feel self-conscious about it because I recognize, is it the most original premise? No, it isn't. But I would say there are some parallels between Freddie's relationship with Frasier and Frasier's relationship with his father, Martin. I mean, they never got the chance to fully live together. They definitely, at least, especially once Freddie like hits his sort of like goth phase, there's definitely some drifting that I do see happening. I know that they do have a bit of bonding, but it does seem like they're not 100% the same.
Uh-huh.
So I was picturing coming back to Seattle, either that or like, I just feel like I need the generations to come together again. I need Freddie. I need Frasier. I guess that's just two. Oh, and Niles is in the mix, of course.
Niles is okay. All right. Yeah, I had a similar, is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Okay. All right. I was tweeting about it before this. Basically, when I had the firestorm of where I just spent like a month watching Frasier, I was like, what would happen if it came back? Like, I didn't even know that this reboot was in the mix. And my idea was similar. So we're along parallel tracks. So you definitely aren't allowed to call yourself a hack because I'm a hack too. But yeah, I would think my idea was, okay, what if Will and Grace had the same problem where the sort of the older cast members, like they had to, the maid, although the actress is still alive, she couldn't be in the show anymore. So they actually did kill her off. Yeah. And it's like a quite moving, actually. Megan Mullally's performance is really amazing in that episode.
Wow.
But yeah, I also think that you would want to pay some kind of homage to Martin Crane has passed away. Even in the last few seasons of Frasier, Martin is thinking about his impending death and he's thinking about Eddie's impending death and he's thinking them together. So I think that is something you would want to be part of the story. And I would want, but my idea was, what if Freddie was like one of these Elon Musk-y, what's the Facebook guy's name? I can't even remember.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah. What if he was like one of these Zuckerbergian, Steve Jobsy kind of, like, what if he was the son Frasier has to live with? But the problem this time is that he sort of has abandoned the sort of literary, artistic, humanist values that Frasier so admires. So what if he was just like, he's in the same clothes every day. He's like, his apartment is like this man child. Beanbag chairs. Like he's not Martin. He's not like old school traditionalist. He's like this new kind of tech person who doesn't have like the refinement. He just eats like Soylent every day. And he just like, he wears the same things. He eats the same things. He has no sense of culture anymore. So I was like, what if Frasier's like radio program bombs and now he's coming back as like this podcast artist, but he's broke. And he's like living with his rich son who also doesn't want his fuddy-duddy dad around. And now the joke is that Frasier has become sort of the old school figure that doesn't understand the new kids and their technology and that sort of thing.
I mean, I am very into this premise.
And we also have David. I would want David to be back, the son, because he would be like 15 now. Roz's kid, what's her name? Oh God. Alice is probably a teen now. So we've got some teens.
That's true.
One of the flash forwards says there's two girls that Niles and Daphne have in the hospital episode.
Oh yeah.
So there's some kids, you know.
This could definitely be like a, well, not the same as Girl Meets World, but it could be. You've got
like
multiple.
Fuller House, maybe? Yeah.
Fuller House, but better than Fuller House.
Well, because we're writing it, right? Like,
right. We're involved. I wonder what, you know, like if it ever came to pass doing the reboot, like whoever was in charge of hiring, like I wonder if they'd go with people that were, say, heavily and emotionally invested in the show, or would they rather somebody who was like distant from it? I don't know. I guess
I am willing to entertain any and all calls. My agent can send spec scripts if you guys need it. Let me know. I'm out here. You know, I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting on the couch watching Frasier episodes on Sunday. So
I don't have an agent, and so you can just email me, go to my website, everything's there, I'll call you. Yes, I would love to be involved. Actually, back to the son for a second. So my first thought after I was thinking about the fact I didn't even really have Freddie mapped out in my head in terms of his personality, but I started thinking about who would play him. So
I want to recast, because the son is he's still working.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. I don't even know his name. Do you?
Not off the top of my head, but I know he's not just like working, he's like on something semi-famous still.
I got distracted because now I actually looked up Freddie Frazier because I see what he looks like. He could be a mogul. It's true.
Yeah. He definitely has the, like, he's never lifted anything more than 5 pounds kind of vibe that I like. I don't know what his comic timing is like. What's his other IMDb stuff like these days?
I don't know. Truly, I just was looking at headshots of him on Google Images. So I feel like I apparently care so much about your opinion about Frasier that I'm just going to say it. Somebody popped into my head and I feel like it's crazy, but I was thinking about Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, thoughts? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have a Jesse Eisenberg likability thing.
I don't like him at all. That's the problem.
I mean, I'm sure he's lovely as a person. And I'm sure, like, I like that he weaponizes his unlikability to play these, like the Lex Luthor character, which is really just a riff on the Zuckerberg character, right? Like, he's played this character a few times, so it's probably right. But then, like, I want him to be vulnerable. I want him to start opening up as a person as the series goes, you know? Like, I want the episode where he, like, learns to love opera, or, like, learns how to woo a woman properly from Frasier, with properly in quotes, you know? Like, I want to see those things. And Eisenberg might be tough.
I agree. I mean, the thing about Eisenberg is the only thing that I truly, like, and I feel like it's because I'm not going to say that I dislike him as a human being, but I know I didn't like him as Lex Luthor.
Right.
I don't know if he's, it's upsetting to think about.
I'm sure he's amazing in person, but he knows how to be that sort of reptilian intellect really well. And I want someone who just hasn't given it any thought. Like, he hasn't really thought about, like, his hygiene or, like, putting product in his hair or anything like that. I don't know who would do that. Like, Michael Cera's almost too overexposed, but that's the energy I would want. Like,
yes, that's the thing. I was thinking, because Michael Cera and Jesse Eisenberg are slightly interchangeable. I mean, they definitely have this neuroses. And, you know, I forget sometimes that that Freddie is also Jewish. He needs that Jewish neuroses.
Right, he's that Jewish, like, Nebbishy quality.
Absolutely. And the mogul thing, definitely, I can see it. His name, by the way, the actor who plays Freddy, is Trevor Einhorn. He is 29, by the way, which weirds me out. In my mind, I was like, he's older than me. He's not. In terms of an IMDb page, here it is. Okay. So, oh, wow. Oh, it's so weird. If you go, I know you can't see it, but at some point when you go to his IMDb page, the picture of him, he's wearing these very nice, like, fancy like silver frames and looks like an ex-president in the 1950s. It's very interesting.
I feel like it's his part to lose. He can screen test. Like, I'm happy to, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I'm sure the execs will have opinions. You know,
I'd want to give him a chance. And also this is a TV revival, meaning to me, I would think you want to get TV people in here, mm-hmm. not necessarily a Jesse Eisenberg.
Right.
Would he even do the Frasier revival? I don't know. But I am 100% down with your revival, especially because I think I hadn't thought about how what was going to separate and cause all of the hilarious and emotional friction.
Right. Yeah.
Between
Frasier
and
Freddie. You need your tinderbox, right? Like, you need to have things going on. Yeah, I mean, the New Girl cast is free. Maybe Jake Johnson wants a crack at it. He might be.
Ooh.
I don't know how old they are now. Like, that's right. Like, I'm thinking of who's good at playing, like, slobs. And he knows how to be a slob.
He's very sloppy. If anything, some of the way he, and, like, I don't think there'd be anything wrong with a bit of Martin's, you know, sprinkles of Martin.
Yes.
In Freddie. And I see that in Jake Johnson for sure.
See, the thing I would want him to also drink Ballantine's, but he's drinking it ironically now, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like
he wears hair wax.
Yeah.
I think. And there's nothing more unlikable than, well, most and awkward than a lot of the characters on, what was that show with TJ Miller that he's not on anymore? I forgot. It's on HBO, but it's a whole show about. Oh, Silicon Valley.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So right there, you've got like a pretty good prototype. And anyone on that show.
So if we open with your funeral, we can have him like raiding Martin's closet. Like, he's wearing all of Martin's old shirts. Like,
absolutely.
But they're not tucked in anymore. That's the difference.
Yeah. And I feel like anyone that did the revival justice would show Martin a high amount of respect.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I kind of want it to be
the opposite. I'd want the set to be the opposite of the Frasier set, where it's just like all this like hipster junk, and then Frasier's one really nice chair. Like, that would be like one beautiful Eames chair in the middle of this like $5 IKEA garbage. Like, that would be the set I'd want to build for it.
Yes, and I'd also love to see Frasier in an IKEA or just trying to set up something from IKEA. And I feel like that's a bit beneath him to set up his own furniture.
Yeah, he's incapable of irony. And so I'd like to see him attending like these ironic parties, or like having like dealing with some shitty record machine from like Urban Outfitters or something like that. Like,
I love that. Yeah, I like the idea of putting him. I'm trying to think of things that are so far ahead of Frasier that he like Snapchat.
Yes, that's good. Yeah,
there's one. I mean, if you really need, or if we need any inspiration, I don't know if you listened, but I did an episode. I did the 10th episode of this podcast with Dan Chamberlain, who is a really funny actor, writer, comedian in New York. He does, and I apologize for breaking the walls here, but I interviewed Frasier Crane for an entire episode. It's completely crazy. It's completely insane, Anthony. Like, things, I mean, go in the, like, I had already, the idea was that I was talking to Frasier Crane and he was down, like, sort of down on his luck money-wise. And that just opens up a lot of comedy in terms of the fact that he's like, I need to come down to the level of all these just other people.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, he's got to go to the convenience store to get his wine now. He's got to, like...
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
we
he's
do
trying to get things out of Blue Apron now or something. He's.
Oh, yeah. I think he would like Blue Apron.
Yeah, you think? Like,
I mean, is it... Well, okay, so I've never actually used Blue Apron, but I thought that they delivered fancy foods. Am I wrong?
My sister uses like a Blue Apron adjacent. I don't even know which one of them it is. We're not plugging a service here, by the way.
But I will.
It's fine.
Blue Apron.
It works to work, but yeah.
Do you want me to?
maybe his new podcast has to negotiate with his like Blue Apron esque sponsor, and he's like not happy about it or something. I don't know.
I love it.
But we'll get to the whiteboard on this and just start sketching ideas.
Yes. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you saw, but on Netflix, there is a new movie starring Kelsey Grammer called Like Father.
Okay. I have not. No.
So I watched it. So it's called like Father, starring, I actually am very into the premise. It's Kelsey Grammer starring as Kristen Bell's estranged father. Oh. So he is her. He left her at a very young age. He comes back to see her get married, even though he's not invited. She gets left at the altar. And then the two of them get really drunk. She's not happy to see him, but she's also lonely. They get really drunk, and then he ends up coming with her on her honeymoon, which is on a cruise. And it's a lot more emotional than you'd expect. But the weird thing is realizing like how old he is now.
Yeah.
So like if there were a reboot, like the timing would work, like in terms of age, because that's the weird part about watching like an early season of Frasier, where I'm like, wait, how old is Martin supposed to be? 65?
I know. It's weird. Like, my experience was watching the early season being like, oh my God, Martin Crane is so hot. Like, I would 100% date Martin Crane. It's like, this is not someone's dad. This is someone's daddy. Like, he looks cute in those early seasons. Even at the end, he's super cute.
He has a lot of charm. He's very charming.
Yes. Yeah. You know, he just like, he smells like cedar wood and like cigars. Like, oh boy.
Cigars. Would you say he was, in terms of, I feel like we've never talked about this, would you say of any character on that show, there's one that you're like, yes, that is the most handsome. That is my Mary of my Kill.
I've heard Keenan actually talk about how like stunt casting handsome people was always a problem because they were never funny. Like the handsomest person who's ever on the show is the ski instructor. Like,
yes,
David Hyde Pierce has an amazing thing where he just like talks about how he couldn't remember his lines because of how hot that guy was. but Martin does it for me. I like his warmth. I mean, obviously I don't need to date a Niles because I am a Niles. Like, I'm too fussy. I don't need another fuss. Like,
that's
give
fair.
Me someone who's just
I like it. Opposites attract.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Now,
yeah, I would 100% date Martin Crane. Plus, he's got a dog. Like, that's even better. Like, everything about those flannels. Like,
I love the flannels, but I have to say, I think I probably am probably mostly a Niles, but I will definitely say I was very attracted to him, especially like I can give you a specific like outfit that I liked and whole vibe, which was when he when Daphne has a fight with Sherry and ends up staying at his at the Montana with him. And I specifically remember like they're like trying to share a fan, and like Niles thinks something's gonna happen, but he's wearing all white linen, and it really works for him. He's wearing white linen pants, like loosely like, you know, buttoned down a little bit. And I was like, that was like the first episode I watched where I was like, okay, I can get into this. Yes.
I find David Hyde Pierce very attractive, like, especially like now, or like, actually I was watching one of the weird episodes I was watching is the one where Niles is growing a beard because they're like living the island life. And as he like relax, also in white linen, now that I think about it, as soon as he relaxes a little, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, because he, like, one of the things he does when he plays Niles is he, like, turns all that, like, sexual charisma way down, right? Like, he's got steel in his spine that David Hyde Pierce just doesn't. Like, Hyde Pierce is so comfortable in his skin, and Niles never is. And I guess
that's
never
true.
Works for me. Like, when he's on The Good Wife or, like, his, like, stage role. Like, as soon as I watch, like, a clip of him, like, introducing even, like, at an awards show, it's like, oh, my God. But Niles never actually...
Yeah, he's pretty neurotic. I actually really enjoy and would probably be like, yeah, this would make sense. Like when there's like at the beginning of an episode when they're at Cafe Nervosa, Roz sees a guy that she thinks is cute. Or no, she decides he's bad in bed because of the way he's blowing on his coffee. Yes. And Niles is doing all the same things. So I was like, yeah.
And she says, you don't even wrinkle the sheets, do you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he really started to let go of all of his sexual inhibitions when he and Daphne got together. But that's just me.
We hear that he did. Like when there's a few weird episodes clustered. It's so strange how like this is happening, but there are a few weird episodes clustering around. Actually, the one we were just talking about, the one where they're green screening them into shots, is the night that episode ends with the first time they have sex.
Oh yeah.
Like that's why he's freaking out. And that's, it's a cleverly like constructed episode because the show has a problem, which is that Niles as a character has put Daphne on too much of a pedestal. And there is like a creepy dimension to their relationship. And they do the very smart thing of hanging a lantern on and being like, okay, what if we just take a full episode to process that creepy energy and put it in front of the audience and put it in front of the characters. But it ends with them having like, we hear about, there's a flashback to the night after they have sex in the second to final episode of the series, which is also a super weird one. The crockpot one. Do you remember this one?
A little, but I would love for you to refresh my memory.
I think it's called Crocktails.
Okay.
And it is, again, one of these incredibly archly structured episodes. So the conceit of it is that Frasier is throwing a dinner party. And he's cooking. It starts with him cooking in the kitchen. And he's on the phone to whoever. I think it may be Charlotte by this point. Yeah, because Charlotte's the last girl. So he's cooking and he's like, I'm throwing a dinner party just like I've thrown 100 times before for just my family. And he goes to reach for a spoon that's in this little crock pot and it chips apart in his hand. And he's like, oh, this damn crock pot. And then the episode keeps telescoping back in time to previous years. And it's every scene is centered around the crock pot somehow. They're all wearing terrible wigs because they're all trying to look like in previous seasons.
I vaguely remember this because of the wigs.
There's some bad shake and go wigs. Poor Perry Gilpin is in like some really rough plastic fantastic wigs. But every sequence sort of takes a moment to nod at the crock pot. And one of the flashbacks is to the night after Daphne and Niles have sex. And we hear both of them talking about how like aerobic it was and how he flipped her over. Like she had the time of her life.
Great. It sounds like things are good and spicy and fun in their sex life. I will tell you, it is really funny to just write the name of that episode and Frasier into Google Images because all the wigs are here and they're terrible.
Are so bad. Even Niles's wig, because they have to wig him up to make him look like season one Niles, right? So he needs the long hair. Also, his hairline is moved a little forward.
Yeah, that's what's even harder because that's 100% not the first show to do it where you got some people that are now 7, 8, 9 years older and now they've got wigs on and it's not a good look. You're like, wait, that makes you look even older.
Yeah. And they have to sew in, they don't move Frasier's hairline, but they have to sew in the long hair at the back because season one, he has that really long hair. So the final flashback of the season of the episode is to the night after the first episode where Roz meets Martin for the first time.
And
that's why they have the crock pot is that it's the fake cheese product that Martin buys to apologize to Frasier for throwing out his expensive cheese. And it's this great way. The episode is like this fantastic way to flash back through the series' run. Like it knows it's the second to last episode. It's the last breath before the big like baby coming and all that stuff. It's like a farewell to all these like moments throughout the series. It's like a bunch of little farce plots being quickly discarded and like not really filled out. Like they get locked out on the balcony. We never see what happens. It's really cute, really sad. The final image is in the stinger, you know, the silent end of the episode where Frasier puts flowers into the crock pot and then fills it with water and it just falls apart. It just starts bringing water everywhere. And it's like the show is done, right? It's like,
wow, that's
goodbye. It's really sad.
That's very dramatic. I do want to watch it. I'm going to rewatch it because it's been a while.
And it's so good. Not particularly funny, but really good.
Yeah. There's definitely some more serious episodes of Frasier. You know what? I'm going to write that down for a future episode. Serious episodes of Frasier.
In my experience, the serious ones are the weird ones. Like,
What else is on your list? Which one is that?
Rooms with a View is the episode where Niles has the heart attack.
Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's like flashes of, you know, what is it? The past, the future, going through the hospital, you know, going through the halls. Yeah.
It's like, it's part of a three-parter. It's like the middle episode. And so not much actually happens plot-wise. He's just like getting ready to go into surgery. And everybody is reacting very differently, right? Like Frasier is over preparing. He's made like handouts to everybody so they'll know what the surgery will be like. Daphne has gotten very quiet. And Martin is doing the thing that we learn in the episode he always does in moments of panic, which is to completely downplay it and make jokes about like, oh, you're being a lazy bones and all this stuff. You're being a gold brick. But as they're wheeling Niles away, they like inject him with a sedative, and he gives this speech about how all roads lead to the hospital. Do you think a hospital has memories? He says, I bet when I walked in, the hospital thought like, oh, you're that little boy who broke his leg in 19 whatever.
Yeah.
And then the episode just like starts flashing back. Like as they're wheeling him down the hall, it keeps panning into the different rooms of the hospital and showing us these flashbacks to like that day when they were kids and he broke his leg, or Maris is crying because her surgery didn't go the way she wanted. And Niles is again in his wig being like, don't worry, Maris, they'll cut more off next time. Martin introduces Frasier to baby Niles. So it's not a funny episode, but it is so strange. And then we're in the present day and Martin is trying to get a chocolate bar out of the vending machine and Daphne smashes it with a fire extinguisher and into tears. Like it's too much almost.
It's a lot. And, as you're mentioning the fact that a lot of these more high concept, intense, episodes happen later on. Do you think at some point, like in the writer's room, it was like, okay, everybody, like, because, I have not been in one, but I wonder if it was a thing of like everyone who's been here from the beginning, who's had some crazy ideas, let's hear them. Because that one is definitely stands alone for sure.
Yeah.
There's definitely as the series goes on and actually, okay, yes, I've definitely seen that in sitcoms where you start to have more flashback episodes, but that one was particularly heartfelt and,
The thing I found when I was looking, again, I came into this with really no preconceptions. And the same way that last time when we were thinking about queer Frasier episodes, we ended up circling Joe Keenan so much. Yeah. Like, oh, look, Joe Keenan here. Like, as soon as you start listing the queerest moments in Frasier, you always find the same writer is usually behind them. I found in working, like, just going through the list, like, literally just sitting and being like, okay, if you ask me to make a list of the weirdest episodes, you have to talk about the crock pot. You have to talk about Freudian sleep with the weird surrealist, like Niles baking a baby into a pie and like Daphne dreaming about how fat she's gotten and all that. And it's like, what I noticed is that my top 10 list only really has three writers on it. It only has Bob Daly, Dan O'Shannon, Laurie Kirkland, and John Sherman, usually Bob Daly and John Sherman working together. It's like always those four names. So like they're not like the creators of Frasier. They're not like they don't write the big episodes. They write the strange episodes, the episodes that start like, who wrote Don Juan in Hell? Like that's another.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Don Juan in Hell is Laurie Kirkland, right? Like it's always the same three. It feels like, I don't know why. I don't know what they're, it looks like a lot of them went on to work on Desperate Housewives, which also has that kind of Baroque, like, a show turning back on itself kind of energy. Like what happens when something starts thinking about its own weirdness, starts thinking about being a mockery of the thing it's pretending to be.
Interesting. I didn't think about that. Like you were the one that made me realize that Joe Keenan had written a lot of mine and your favorite episodes. So that makes, and they definitely share some similarities.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Looking at my notes. Daphne Returns, which we already just talked about, the green screen episode, that's Dan O'Shannon and Bob Daly too. Like it's really always the same people. It's so strange.
I want to talk to all of them. I don't know how many of them are on Twitter. So far it's Joe Keenan.
Yeah, and well, I mean, all of them have that Frasier money. Even if they're on Twitter, they're probably not checking it as much as we are. That's for sure.
Yes, I would love to. This is not something I've asked, but I think about it a lot, which is like, if you had been a writer on a show like Frasier or Friends or Seinfeld, what does that money look like? Just specifically having been a writer on it, do you get a, what is it? Royalties? I don't know how it works.
I think you get, I mean, you get your paycheck for being on the show. You get, if you create a character, I was just talking to Jane Espenson, who worked on Buffy just like literally a few days ago, which is why Buffy's so fresh in my head. She said that, if you create a character who subsequently gets used in other episodes, for every episode they appear in, you get $300. So
shit, that sounds,
I doubt
great.
They get too much of a royalty back end though.
I wanted to ask you if you thought this was a weird episode. Actually, first, let me ask you, is there an episode you have yet to mention yet that you have very strong feelings about as weird?
Don Juan in Hell, we talked about glancingly. That's the one where, that's the one, Lori Kirkland wrote it. That's the one where Frasier, it's the opening of season 9. Again, one of these multi-part openers. And it's the one where Frasier is trying to pick between Claire and Lana, the girl from high school, as the kid, Kirby. Mm-hmm. And he sort of has a crisis where he's like, what the fuck is wrong with me? What the hell is wrong with me?
You can swear. Fine.
Well,
you
Frasier
can say,
didn't,
fuck.
But I did. And he has this crazy psychodrama. He drives up to a cabin and all his previous love interests manifest as these figures of his subconscious. So like Lilith is there. Diane is there.
Rita
one of
Wilson.
The many versions of Nanette is there. And his mom, Hester, is there. And they're all fighting with him about, like, why is your pattern always the same? Like, when he comes to the decision that he's alone because he's afraid to be alone.
Okay.
Is the end of the episode.
Yeah.
That one is, like, a really strange, again, like, not super jokey, very interior, very thinking about, like, a character study, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I was going to say, I know this isn't the same, but I was going to say another episode I found, let's call it high concept, takes place in that same cabin, and that's Mamma Mia.
Oh, yes. That is a strange, I mean, that's...
Mamma Mia spooked me, especially because they really go hard on, you know, what is it? Not Freudian, but what is it?
No, it's definitely Freudian. His mom even in the flashbacks.
The Oedipus complex. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. It's so weird. It's weird because, well, also it's extra weird because now I've seen the episode of Cheers and I can't remember if we've talked about this or if you've seen it, but I watched the episode of Cheers, even though I don't watch Cheers, but somebody told me to watch the episode where Hester comes to visit Frasier and his then fiance Diane. And Hester is crazy. When Frasier goes to the bathroom, she's like, you leave my son or I'll kill you. And says like, I have a gun. Like yes, it's insane. Yes. And then, you know, you see Rita Wilson and you're like, I wish you were my mom.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know.
Don Juan in Hell references that specifically. There's a moment where the Diane avatar confronts the Hester avatar and is like, you pulled a gun on me. And Hester is just like completely dismissive of it. Because it has this problem where like Hester is actually, she's a complicated figure in the history of the show, right? Like she isn't just like the show does put her on a pedestal of being like, well, Frasier does. He puts her on this pedestal of like she is, even in Don Juan in Hell, he's thinking about how she is the archetype of womanhood to him, but he knows she cheated. It comes up in Don Juan in Hell.
Right.
She cheated on Martin. Mm-hmm. And it's like, has that done some damage to him, even as an adult, where he thinks that there is no woman worthy of him, not even the female ideal of motherhood in this very Freudian way can measure up. So there is no woman. He will always find a flaw, is what he's trying to deal with in Don Juan in Hell. And the horror of the Mamma Mia is that like, even when he finds the woman that is his mother, she still isn't right. she doesn't just look like the mother. Like we see that Rhea Wilson is his mother in that episode. She's an uncanny recurrence, to sort of use Freud's own language again. Like she confronts us with something that is deeply unsettling. That's what's strange about that episode. When we see Martin react to seeing her, It is deeply unsettling to the audience, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He looks completely freaked out. Also, there's certain moments where I'm like, wow, like Kelsey Grammer, the way David Hyde Pierce has this amazing sort of way he can like contort his body, things that Frasier does with, or that Kelsey Grammer does with his face.
Yeah.
There are moments that I just never forget. And one particular one, which honestly just freaks me out because it's the right face, is when his then girlfriend, who looks like his mother, like takes her clothes off because he's trying to like get in the mood to have sex. And his face and his mouth like opens wider than I've seen any mouth open, because it's just truly horrifying when you're like, oh my God, am I gonna have sex with my mom?
and childish, right? Like suddenly it is the face of a child. Like he's
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That for me, I consider that a weird high concept mm-hmm. episode. Let's see. So yes, I agree with everything you've mentioned, Mamma Mia, Don Juan in Hell, The Impossible Dream. Oh.
The Impossible Dream is the Gill one, right? The other Freudian dream.
That
episode.
Was another Freudian dream.
Yeah.
What do you think it means? I had a specific question and you might have your own thoughts, but I never understood what it's supposed to mean, or if it's sort of just like, you know, just ending on a funny note, that the conclusion of that episode is Freud getting into bed with him.
Right. I think we talked about this episode a little with the queer Frasier episode.
We did
actually,
a little.
Is like, the show is, I mean, it's Frasier's subconscious, but it's also the show's subconscious is what's being processed. Is like the show wants to, it's one of the episodes where the show thinks purposefully, purposively about how queer Frasier is and how queer Frasier in italics is, right? Like it's a show, right. It's an episode that's like, well, this character is a gay man in every way, except that he's not sleeping with men. So what does that mean? And to sort of throw him in with Freud at the end. I think the conclusion the episode comes to is that the dream was Frasier giving himself a problem because he had no problems, right? Like he's not satisfied in his career. He's not dealing with any interesting calls. So his brain creates a puzzle he can't solve. Even the episode sort of builds in the mother stuff, right? Like the tattoo says Hesty, which mm-hmm. he theorizes might be his mother's name, Hester. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Chesty.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I think it's supposed to be one last little puzzle thrown at us that he gets in bed with Freud.
I conclude that in terms of the number, well, right now only two specific episodes come to, or two. Anytime there's dreams on that show, I'm very into it. Just because I feel like I can relate in terms of just having very odd dreams.
Really? Like I never remember my dreams.
Never?
Never. Damn. I never remember them. No.
What about, have you ever had to like take NyQuil when you were sick? I truly bring that up because if I've ever had to take NyQuil, which I don't like to take, I truly only take it when I'm truly congested and like can't fall asleep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I have the strangest dreams, just the oddest, strangest dreams. Wow, you don't remember your dreams. Okay,
Almost never. I think that, as surrealist as the dream, like Freudian Sleep is a very strange episode. But it's, I think, just thinking about the fact that, I mean, Buffy also, we were talking about Buffy having a musical episode. Buffy has a dream episode that is also one of its most famous. And I think that what dream episodes give you and what the 90s could really do for the first time is use the surrealism of a dream episode and trust the audience to know the characters enough that you can do interesting character studies about them. Like that's what a dream episode lets you do, is sort of plumb the depths of what this character is thinking. It's also what the Don Juan in Hell episode is doing. Like, what if you just have a conversation about what the person is thinking and trust the audience that they don't need a series of like rollicking physical comedy jokes to make it work?
Yeah. Well, also, I think given I also would think if you're doing a dream episode, because I feel like, you know, if you're a writer and you're writing a character that you know really well in real life, at a certain point, you're like, that character wouldn't do that. But I feel like you have a bit more of a free pass in a dream, you know?
And I mean, Frasier is one of the longest running characters in television history, right? Like between Cheers and Frasier, he was on the air for what, 20 years? Like
at least 22, I think. Cause it was like what, 11 years, Frasier. And I think 11 for Cheers, I think.
Right. Like there's that episode where, Nanette in the present day sort of comes back. She's like a success and, she like yells, you know what it's like to play the same character for 20 years? And they let Kelsey Grammer have a reaction shot to that. And it's like, we know a lot. And even the contradictions of Frasier is one of the things these dream episodes try to solve. Like, how do we make Nanette work as a character? Like, why would someone like Frasier have ever married a hippie? How do we reconcile a Hester who packs a gun to the character we've actually come to know quite well and quite with some psychological complexity? The dream episodes sort of create a space to let these jagged edges of mismatch bump against each other and bring them to the surface, which is also what, like, that's what the weird episodes let you do. That's what the green screen episode of Niles lets you do. What happens when a person puts someone on an impossible pedestal? How do we move past that?
Absolutely.
And these weird episodes say, like, look, let us just, like, literally look at that. Let us have characters talk about it out loud, and then we can process it in front of the audience instead of not acknowledging it, which is what an inferior show would do, is just like, well, let's never mention Nanette again, right? Like,
sure.
Let's pretend Niles's idealization of Daphne is healthy. Let's write off the fat jokes as just being a way we escaped dealing with Jane Leaves' pregnancy. Instead, for a full year after that, Daphne is still thinking about her body's changes. Like, in that dream episode, she's pregnant and worried that she'll never be beautiful again. Having that processed in front of us is really neat. Having her freak out in the same episode that Niles is thinking about the green screen, having her trying to deal with the fact that she decides she got fat because she could never live up to that ideal. She ate because, and they've never had sex because she can never be that ideal woman. I think that's fascinating. And it's also the episode where the show stops letting the fat jokes be funny in that episode.
Right. Yes. Because I always felt weird about that.
Yeah, it is weird. Sure. And it's like there's a scene in it where they're still making them and they stop being funny. And Niles is making jokes about her diagnosis. And you can hear the live audience even start to not know if they're allowed to laugh anymore. Like,
right.
Frasier has installed the oinking sound in the fridge and she yanks it out and crushes it. And then Niles keeps making these jokes. And you can hear some people in the audience are laughing and some of them are like, ooh. It's really amazing, and it's really upsetting to watch.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, like, that was very uncomfortable. Also, then for the first time, which is, like, just, like, I guess I felt like I was growing up with them, which was, like, Niles being upset, like, at Daphne. Like, I hadn't really seen that before, and, like, it's so... I'm not saying it's unrealistic, but it's so, like, unpleasant. Like, you know, when he's just making snide remarks about her, I think her therapist.
Her therapist, like, Gloria. Right?
Niles, how dare you? You worship Daphne. This isn't okay. Which I think also falls into, you know, watching things unfold.
Yeah. And he says, I don't like your cooking. And then he says, you're not psychic, right? They have an ugly fight. And it's important that it be ugly because it lets them have a real... That is the moment after they have that ugly fight that they can finally have sex because they're finally equals to each other. They're finally acknowledging flaws in each other. The last line of the episode is Niles saying, you know what, Frasier? It was nothing like I imagined. Like, because the ideal Daphne is kind of done. And now we can have a real meeting of minds between them.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, I don't know if epiphany is the right word, but I do remember, like, also if you type in, it's just fun to type in episodes of TV and see what comes up on Google Images is the conclusion here. But when I typed in Don Juan in Hell, like, one of the first things that comes up is, like, Frasier opening the door and there they are. All the women. And at first, because, like, number one, I roll my eyes because I'm like, oh, God, like, how, like, oh, look at all these gorgeous women. Let me, you know, here's my suspension of disbelief. Then once I got over that, I thought, wow, and perhaps you think about this too. I've never thought of having everyone I was ever involved with romantically in one room, but the thought of it is truly frightening.
Yeah. It's
very frightening.
There's the moment in it where Hester, like, enters, and it's a great entrance for Rita Wilson, but she looks around the room and she's like, well, this is the cream of the crop, huh? Like, and that is, like, a really, I mean, the title Don Juan in Hell, it comes from a Shaw mini, a small section of a George Bernard Shaw play. But the idea, that is why it is hell. Like, what if Don Juan, this sort of famous lover, his version of hell would be to have to actually confront as real people the persons that he has just treated as sexual objects. Like, what if you were forced to reckon with what it meant about you that you had just sort of had these relationships with other people? It is terrifying. I can't even imagine what it'd be like having all my exes in the same room.
I'm just picturing it right now. It's upsetting.
The horrible experience also of being a gay dude is your exes can sleep with each other, which
Oh my God. Sorry, that just made my head explode.
I've had exes hook up with exes, and that is not something you ever want to imagine.
No. I mean, that's easily worse than the closest thing I could have to that, which I have never had, which is if I had ever been like romantically involved with like a guy in like a similar, in like the same group of friends, and then like somebody that I was friends with, like a woman, dated him. That would be upsetting, but that's like a whole nother level. Oh yes.
Yeah.
You should,
yeah.
I don't know how, if you have, just tweet about that. I just, it's just, woo.
I need to protect the parties involved, but
it
is, yeah, it is not. I mean, it's also kind of Frasier's problem is like, as much as Diane is one of the loves of his life, she's also, she left him for one of his best friends, right? So it's like,
yeah. Oh, that'll really fuck you up. Not,
I mean,
that
Lilith
I have
slept with his brother too, right?
Yeah, like, that which was I love that episode, by the way.
It's a weird one. It's like, it is again like interested in cultivating its surrealism. Like, he's driving along the highway and they keep passing Nanette and the characters, because they're not playing themselves, they're playing versions of his mind. So, like, he misremembers things, and some of them will be like, actually, that was me. That wasn't her. Like, it's really neat to watch it happen.
Absolutely. Yes. I'll also be curious, by the way, if this reboot or this revival actually happens, what are the women? Who are the women going to be that matched up, you know? Because I feel like it, like, thinking back on Martin and the, like, who does he end up with? He ends up with the woman who babysat his kids. And and I feel like that tends to get overlooked. Do you remember that? Wendy Malick?
Yes. Ronnie is Frasier's old babysitter.
Right. So that's a weird thing. But then when I see people that are already like, if I see somebody, in all honesty, who's 65 and they're with somebody who's 10 years older, I feel that I'm still at a young age that like that doesn't seem that dramatic to me. But then when when it goes back further, you know, the fact that I am too old to date for this is the only reason I'm not dating Leonardo DiCaprio, because he only dates 22-year-olds now. So it's like a very weird thing. So I'm like, ugh, if he gets matched up with, I don't know, whoever's on Riverdale right now, I'm just going to be really, really upset.
Right. I mean, as my Martin Crane fetishization indicates, I tend to date older than me, but the temptation, well, right? Like, now that I think about it, Freddie is however old, 30, you said.
Yeah.
Alice is maybe 20 as a character, and they're not related. So one of the writer's room temptations might be to make that a thing.
Absolutely.
I would want to run the math on how old Alice is. If it were up to me, Frasier and Roz have had a falling out, and now they're like almost antagonistic. Maybe Roz is like running some kind of successful media empire, and Frasier's on the outs. That would be something I'd want to think about. And then the kids could get close, and that would be tension.
Absolutely. And I would also happily love to see them reignite their friendship, similarly to, I'm a big Parks and Recreation fan. Have you ever watched?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, at some point, what is it, in the last season, I think it's the future and, okay, I don't want to ruin the show. Let's just say there's an episode where Ron and Leslie have had a falling out, and then I think they get locked in their office together and then reignite their friendship. But it kind of starts off with them hating each other and they slowly open up.
Will and Grace infamously ends with that terrible fight, right, that the reboot had to completely ignore, right? The end of the initial run of Will and Grace indicates that they cease being friends for decades.
I don't remember that.
The last scene of Will and Grace is their kids are now at college together, and it's the first time the kids, the Will and Grace, have spoken in decades. Because it was the 90s, and the only way the 90s can imagine a relationship between a gay man and a straight woman is as fundamentally toxic, right? Like,
of course. Well, listen, I would like to clear up one thing about the me having an issue with older men and younger women. This is why. This is specifically, I'm specifically speaking about straight older men. I am bitter because I do not feel that the reverse is beloved. Like, I don't think it's a norm for an older woman to date a younger man. Yeah. That is my specific beef with that. It's specifically with straight older men dating younger women.
It's what makes Roz so fun as a character, right? Like, she's sort of unapologetic about these. Like, and what made her arc so interesting is, like, Alice came along and she's like, actually, this guy is kind of an idiot. And, like, let him go have his, like, young life. I can raise this kid on my own.
Right. It was very, to me, very logical thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, I didn't understand it as a kid, but now when I rewatched it, it's like, oh, yeah, she's like, that's 100% the right call. Like,
absolutely, she
does the right thing there. But she was never apologetic about it. She was always like, she was willing to hook up with these younger guys and whatever, as long as they were happy and having fun.
Of course. In the revival, in my mind, I'm seeing her still living that great life.
Oh, yeah. She's still dating like 25 years old.
Younger men. Yes. I would love to see the younger men. I'm very excited about that. Well, if you can believe it, we've been talking for who even knows how long? It's been magical. I think we've gone through a lot of weird episodes.
Yeah.
And it sounds like we're both on board to be. I know I will be involved in any way that anyone will
I will hold
this revival.
Yeah, I will fill the background. I will paint sets.
Yeah, and like being super realistically, like one of us is going to get hired in some way, shape, or form. And that means the other one's going to, like, if you end up doing something on that show, throw me in as an extra.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Yeah, and vice versa. Like, yeah.
I have so many connections to the cast, you know. I mean, just, you know, I do have, I mean, Joe Keenan and I have spoken on the phone.
That's right. Yeah, you've got one of the great minds of Frasier on speed dial. So you've got an edge on me.
60 minutes. And by the way, I don't know if I would ever have the nerve because I never want to bother a famous person. But like the only way I feel like I would run into David Hyde Pierce at this point, if he still takes the subway sometimes, that's the only way. And I just don't see myself going up to him. Like I picture myself writing him a note and that would be really creepy and like giving it to him. So
I'll can't even imagine. I'd be so nervous. He's so.
Yeah, me too.
He's so beautiful too.
I'm like flustered thinking about it. Before we end, I am curious, is there anything you would like me to plug? I was going to mention your Twitter.
No, I have the podcast, The Devil's Party, which is like me reading Paradise Lost. But yeah, the Twitter's fine. Anything I do goes through the Twitter. So
everything goes through the Twitter.
Sure do.
and it's, let me make sure. Mia Koopa.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm gonna spell it so that everyone knows what I'm talking about. Although chances are, if you're listening, I know why you're here. It's because Anthony's here, and I am very flattered because.
Please, riding that Joe Keenan wave, listeners. That's why.
Me too, but you do. I say this. This is a full compliment. It appears that you have very like loyal followers. That's like what I've noticed of just like, you know, people I follow is I don't have much interaction, to be honest, with most people that I follow, even people that I like. But I feel like that's what was so like nice. Like when I posted your episode, just like how many replies you got of just like people that were like, yes, Anthony, my friend. Cause
I'm very online.
You're very online. So you should follow Anthony at Mia Koopa, MEAKOOPA on
That's
Twitter.
It.
Cause he's fun. And
I mostly just do this. I mostly just like talk about Frasier.
That's great. I mean, listen, this is like right now talking to you combined with the fact that this sign, if listeners, you can't see it, but if you go to my Instagram very soon or by the time you listen to this episode, I will have posted a picture of me with this really amazing sign that does light up, Anthony.
Oh my God. It says recording now. I'm listening. It has the cutest little graphic of a little latte on it.
I'm
obsessed. It is adorable.
Yes,
you have that gorgeous painting behind you, which
yes.
is
That's my producer's, my producer, Caitlin, decorated her office because this is not my office. But yeah, you know, when I eventually get some cast members in here, you know, we'll just take a sign or we'll take a picture next to the sign. By the way, Anthony, this is still a dream of mine to do a live episode. I don't know how or when, but it might take place in New York. And if it happened, I would have to do some sort of pre-recorded segment with you or something.
Sure. I can be the caller that like comes on with
yes.
the problem. Yeah.
I'd love to have some callers. That'd be amazing. Well, thank you so much for stopping by the internet. We're on Google Hangout, listeners.
thank you for having me. I feel like this made me think about a texture of the show and like a quality of the show I hadn't given enough thought. And now it's like, yeah. I have like all these writers on my radar and these like weird thematic things on my radar. So thank you so much. Thank you for a good chat too.
It's such a great chat. Thank you for a great chat. And, you know, I just hope eventually you end up like, I mean, my choices were limited. When I was in college, I took a South Park class, which was, you know, I don't know why I did it, but obviously you'll be doing the one on Frasier.
Yes. That's the dream. Those who can't write the new Frasier reboot teach the new Frasier reboot. So
that's fair. And I'd like to think at some point, whatever Frasier news comes out, you're welcome back on this podcast anytime you want.
Let's just dish about it. Sure.
Amazing. Love it. All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Anthony, for stopping by. Until next time. Good night, Seattle.